From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where, after years of bureaucratic back and forth, the nation's first-of-its-kind wind farm has won federal approval. This means dozens of wind turbines could soon be waving hello to us off the shores of Cape Cod. Here with more on the project and what it means for Massachusetts residents is Jeanette Barnes, a reporter and producer at GBH's Cape Cod station, CAI. Hey, Jeanette, how's it going?
Hey, Paris.
Before we talk about the future, can you briefly remind us of the history of this project?
Sure. So the state and the electric companies in Massachusetts worked together on starting the first bid process for a Massachusetts offshore wind farm 4 years ago. The bidders have to hold a lease on a wind development area in federal waters, and getting those leases was a separate process. Vineyard Wind won a state contract, a Massachusetts contract with the electric companies, I should say, in 2018. And its lease area starts about 15 miles off Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket. It's been going through a long permitting process, which was delayed under the Trump administration. At one point, Vineyard Wind actually withdrew its application from the federal process, but then restarted it after Biden took office. And here we are with the final approval. So the plan is to have 62 turbines. They actually got approved for 84, but they don't need them all to meet their contract for about 800 megawatts of energy. And that's because the turbines have gotten more powerful since the project started. The transmission lines will come ashore on Cape Cod and put the power right into the grid.
Okay, now on to the good stuff. Green energy supporters have been waiting on this news for years, so tell us a little bit more about what this decision means.
Well, practically speaking, it means Vineyard Wind has the go-ahead to start construction as soon as they're ready. But big picture-wise, you know, advocates are saying this really marks a turning point for moving away from our reliance on fossil fuels. Vineyard Wind can power 400,000 homes, and there are more wind farms in the pipeline. So this blazed a trail in terms of what it takes to get a project approved. It's also widely considered to be the launching point for a new industry here in the U.S., because until now, there really weren't enough turbines in U.S. waters to sustain very many jobs. But the hope is that more jobs will follow as the industry grows here.
So what happens next for Vineyard Wind, and when does the construction start?
They have to wrap up the financing first because they couldn't do that until they had the approval. Lars Peterson, the CEO, said he expects that to happen sometime in the second half of this year. As soon as practical after that, they're planning to start the onshore work, which means burying transmission cables where the power will come ashore in Barnstable on the Mid-Cape. Next year, they'll bury the offshore wind cables under the seabed out to the site, which again is about 15 miles south of Martha's Vineyard. And then in 2023 is when we'll start seeing foundations and turbines going up. The projected opening of the wind farm is by the end of 2023.
You mentioned there are other offshore wind projects already in the pipeline, and this is happening in states up and down the East Coast. But even here in Massachusetts, we saw more news this week about the next project, right?
That's right. The state issued its third request for proposals, or RFP, on last Friday. Remember, Mayflower Wind won the second contract, so now the state's looking for number three. We've got Vineyard Wind and Mayflower Wind. This RFP allows projects to be up to 1,600 megawatts, which is about double the size of each of the other ones. It would probably mean a number of turbines in the low hundreds, given today's technology. Turbines have gotten more powerful over time. So with Vineyard Wind, for example, the turbines are twice as powerful as the ones at Block Island. There's a five-turbine wind farm off Block Island. They're also larger now as well.
And I know you talked to the mayor of New Bedford about this RFP because he and Governor Baker have had some disagreement over the approach to the job creation requirements the state puts on bidders. What's that all about?
Well, some critics say the state's procurement process doesn't put enough emphasis on economic development, especially compared to states like New York and New Jersey. John Mitchell, the mayor of New Bedford, agrees with that. He told me there are two things driving it. One, the state has a price cap on offshore wind power, so that limits the company's ability to recoup the cost of job investments. That cap is actually in legislation. And the second thing is that the RFPs don't disclose to the bidders how much the economic benefits will be worth to them in the bidding process, and it's a competitive process. The state did include a requirement in the latest RFP that if a wind company makes a commitment along those lines, it has to be in a signed memorandum of understanding or a similar document. And Katie Theoharides, the state secretary of energy and environment, told me the process the state is using is expected to bring in $130 million in economic benefits from the first two wind farms. So the state is feeling good about that, but there is a little bit of a difference of approach there.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to watch. That's Jeanette Barnes, a reporter and producer at GBH's Cape Cod station, CAI. Thanks so much for getting us up to speed.
Thanks for having me.
Before I go, I should tell you what else is up. In Fall River, a jury has found former Mayor Jaisal F. Correa guilty on 21 federal counts, including several extortion charges. Correa was found not guilty on just 3 counts, and legal experts say it's almost certain Correa is headed to prison. Correa is accused of stealing from investors who backed his smartphone app and extorting tens of thousands of dollars from marijuana entrepreneurs looking to operate in Fall River. Meanwhile, although federal guidance now says it's okay for fully vaccinated Americans to abandon their masks in most indoor settings, Massachusetts has opted to keep its indoor mask mandate in place for now. Several experts say the CDC's dramatic reversal in mask guidance does make scientific sense, given the steady decline in COVID case numbers and increase in vaccinations. But Brown University School of Public Health Dean Ashish Jha is glad the state's indoor mask mandate remains in place, since a significant chunk of the population remains vulnerable.
There's still a lot of unvaccinated people who are still in the process of getting vaccinated, and it takes about 6 weeks or so from that time period for people to get fully vaccinated.
Jha says if and when the state's indoor mandate is lifted, anyone who feels safer wearing a mask should continue to do so. Speaking of vaccinations, nearly 44% of the state's residents and more than 55% of adults are fully vaccinated. And now, young people between the ages of 12 and 15 are lining up for their shots as well. 12-year-old Diane Rodos was among the first children to get the vaccine in Chelsea, a city of Latino immigrants hit hard by the pandemic.
I'm excited, you know, finally getting to be like in a normal life finally, you know, not having to worry about stressing in school, you know, like finally getting to see the people I really want to see, especially like my friends. I really miss them.
State data suggests Latinos and Blacks have the lowest vaccination rate of any ethnic group in Suffolk County, where Chelsea is located. And finally, for the first time since last spring, the Coolidge Corner Theater lowered the lights and held its first in-person screening yesterday. Here's what some of y'all had to say about going back to the movies. James in Somerville is looking forward to seeing the new Godzilla King Kong movie in theaters, a place James says is especially great during the summer when it's hot outside. Lisa, all the way in St. Simons Island, Georgia, misses sitting in a movie theater with her sweetheart, quote, wondering what may happen when we get home as the story unfolds and we share that experience together. Ooh, that sounds romantic, Lisa. And Kristen in Wareham is looking forward to getting back into those reclining movie theater chairs and eating some of that delicious movie theater popcorn. I'm right there with you, Kristen. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since fresh popcorn and extra butter, I'm Paris Alston. My co-host Arun is back with you next week. Until then, be well. Speaking of podcasts, here's one more you may enjoy. Innovation Hub is a show that celebrates inventive ideas in every aspect of our lives, from education to medicine, transportation to the economy, politics to technology. You'll hear writers, scholars, and other voices who will challenge your assumptions. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.